Chapter 23. Satan's Grand Ball. Margarita saw everything through a haze. She remembered lots of candles and a bejeweled pool. When Margarita stepped into the pool, Hella, assisted by Natasha, doused her in a warm, thick, red liquid. Margarita felt a salty taste on her lips and realized that she was being bathed in blood. Then Margarita was thrown on a crystal couch, and her skin was rubbed with large green leaves until it began to shine. The cat barged in and began to help. He squatted near Margarita's feet and began to rub the soles of her feet as if he were a street shoeshine. Margarita did not remember who made her shoes out of pale rose petals, or how they closed around her feet with golden clasps. Something pulled Margarita up and placed her before a mirror, and a royal diamond crown flashed in her hair. Korovyov appeared out of nowhere and placed a heavy necklace on her neck, bearing the image of a black poodle in an oval frame. The ornament burdened the queen immensely. The chain began to chafe her neck immediately, and the heavy image pulled her down. Nonetheless, something made up for the unpleasantness caused by the black poodle necklace. It was the deference now extended to her by Korovyov and Behemoth. "Alas," Korovyov muttered as he stood near the entrance of the room with the pool. "Allow me to give you a final piece of advice, my queen. The guests will be diverse characters, but you can't show anyone your preference, Queen Margot. Even if you don't like someone, I trust you won't show it on your face. One more thing. Don't forget anyone. At least a smile, at least a turn of the head if you cannot find time for words. Anything but lack of attention. They cannot bear it."
Accompanied by Korovyov and Behemoth, Margarita stepped out of the pool room and into complete darkness.
"Me, me," whispered the cat. "I'll give the signal."
"Do it,"
Korovyov replied from the dark.
"Ball!"
The cat shrieked piercingly, and Margarita cried out and shut her eyes for several seconds. The ball engulfed her all at once in the form of light, sound, and smell. Korovyov took her under the arm, and Margarita found herself in a tropical forest. Red-breasted, green-tailed parrots perched and hopped on the lianas with deafening screeches of,
"I am delighted!"
But the forest soon ended, its steamy stuffiness giving way to the cool atmosphere of a ballroom with columns made of a yellowish, sparkling stone. The hall was completely empty, save for naked Africans in silver headdresses standing at attention by the columns. Korovyov released Margarita's arm and whispered,
"Straight ahead, towards the tulips."
A low wall of white tulips appeared before Margarita, and beyond it she saw a sea of small shaded lights, full of white shirts and black tailcoats. Margarita finally identified the source of the ballroom sounds. The roar of trumpets came crashing towards her, and then the sound of soaring violins broke through it and washed over her body like blood. An orchestra numbering 150 men was playing a polonaise. A man in a tailcoat towered above the orchestra. Seeing Margarita, he grew pale, smiled, and then with a wave of his hand brought the entire orchestra to its feet. Without missing a beat, the orchestra stood up, and its sounds continued to pour over Margarita. The conductor turned away from the orchestra and gave a low bow, spreading his hands broadly to the sides. Smiling, Margarita waved her hand.
"Not enough," Korovyov whispered. "He won't sleep all night. Shout to him, 'Greetings, King of Waltzes.'"
Margarita shouted it and was surprised at the strength of her own voice, full as a bell, as it carried over the howling of the orchestra. The man trembled with joy and pressed his left hand to his heart, even as his right continued to wave to the orchestra with a white baton.
Not enough, Korofiev kept whispering. Look to the left, at the first violins, and nod, so each man thinks you've recognised him in particular. There are none but world celebrities here. Look over there, at the first stand. It is Vuitton. Very good. Now, let's move on.
Who is the conductor? Margarita asked as she flew off.
Johann Strauss, shouted the cat.
The next hall had no columns. Instead, one set of walls was covered in red, pink, and milk-white roses, and the other in Japanese double camellias. Fountains hissed between the walls, and three pools bubbled with champagne. Africans in crimson headbands dashed around the pools, filling flat cups with champagne using silver ladles. In a large gap in the pink wall, a man in a red swallow-tailed coat was bouncing around on a stage. An unbearably loud jazz band roared before him. Flying away, Margarita could see the virtuoso jazz man struggle against the polonaise blowing at Margarita's back, and the musicians crouched in comic terror as he hit them on the heads with his cymbal. Finally, they arrived on the platform where Korovyov had first met her in the darkness with his lamp. Margarita was standing high up at the head of a grand carpeted staircase that stretched far below. Down there, so far away that she could have been looking through the wrong end of a telescope, Margarita saw a gigantic foyer with a truly enormous fireplace that could have easily fitted a 5-ton track in its cold black mouth. The sounds of the orchestra came from far away. They stood there, motionlessly, for about a minute.
"Where are the guests?" Margarita asked Korovyov.
"They'll come, my queen. They'll come very soon. There'll be no shortage of them." "Everything must be ready in advance, my queen," Korovyov explained, his broken monocle glinting in the light. "Less than 10 seconds until midnight. It's about to start."
The 10 seconds seemed extremely long to Margarita. Then a crash came from the giant fireplace below, and a gallows leapt out with someone's decaying corpse still dangling on it. The corpse fell from the rope, struck the floor, and became a handsome, dark-haired man in a tailcoat and patent leather shoes. A small, half-rotten coffin ran out of the fireplace. Its lid swung open, and another corpse fell out. The handsome man ran up to it gallantly and offered his bent arm. The second corpse turned into a lively, naked woman in black shoes and with black feathers in her hair, and then both the man and the woman hurried up the staircase.
"The first," Korovyov exclaimed, "Monsieur Jacques and his spouse. Allow me to introduce a most interesting man, my queen, a known counterfeiter, a traitor to his government, but a very decent alchemist. He is famous for having poisoned the king's mistress. Look how handsome he is."
Her mouth open, the pale Margarita watched the gallows and the coffin disappear in a side passage of the foyer. Meanwhile, a headless corpse with one arm missing appeared from the fireplace, struck the floor, and turned into a man in a tailcoat. Pale with excitement, Monsieur Jacques' spouse was already kneeling on one knee before Margarita.
"Ma queen,"
muttered Monsieur Jacques' spouse.
"The queen is delighted,"
shouted Korovyov. Smiling lifeless yet friendly smiles, the young men accompanying Azazello were already prodding Monsieur Jacques and his spouse aside towards the cups of champagne held by the Africans. The solitary man in tails was running up the steps.
"Earl Robert," Korovyov whispered to Margarita, "the reverse case. This one was a lover of the Queen and poisoned his wife."
"We are pleased, Earl,"
Behemoth cried. One after another, three coffins fell out of the fireplace, each bursting and falling apart. A man in a dark mantle walked out and was promptly knifed in the back by the man following him out of the black hole. A muffled cry came from below. An almost fully decayed corpse ran out of the fireplace. The staircase began to fill up. There was now a man in tails on every step, and a naked woman beside each, distinguished only by the colour of her shoes and the feathers in her hair. Margarita stopped noticing what went on in the foyer below. She raised and lowered her hand mechanically, baring her teeth in an identical smile for each guest. A solid wall of people was now storming Margarita's platform from below. Nude female bodies rose among the tailcoats of the men. Tan and pale and coffee-coloured and black, they floated towards Margarita. Every second now, Margarita felt lips touch her knee. Every second she would stretch out her hand for a kiss. Her face stiffened into a frozen mask of welcoming.
"I'm delighted," Kravyov sang monotonously. "We are delighted. The Queen is delighted."
"I am delighted," shrieked the cat.
"The Marquise," muttered Korofyov. "She poisoned her father, two brothers, and two sisters because of the inheritance. The Queen is delighted. Madame Minkina, how pretty she looks. A little nervous, though. Why burn the maid's face with curling irons? Of course one is liable to get murdered after that. The Queen is delighted. A moment of your attention, my Queen. The Emperor Rudolf, a sorcerer and an alchemist. Another alchemist. Hanged. Ah, there she is. What a lovely brothel she kept in Strasbourg. We are delighted. Next, a Moscow dressmaker who we love for her inexhaustible imagination. She kept a shop and thought up a terribly funny thing. She drilled two holes in the fitting room wall.
Did the ladies know? Asked Margarita.
Every single one, my queen, replied Korofyov. I am delighted. This 20-year-old boy had strange ideas since childhood, an eccentric and a dreamer. A girl fell in love with him, and he went and sold her into prostitution.
A river flowed from below, with no end in sight. Its source, the giant fireplace, kept feeding it. An hour went by, and then another. Margarita noticed that the chain on her neck was growing heavier. A sharp, needling pain suddenly pierced Margarita's right hand, and clenching her teeth, she placed her elbow on the pedestal. Neither Gaius Caesar Caligula nor Messalina piqued Margarita's interest, nor did any of the other kings, dukes, cavaliers, suicides, poisoners, gallows birds, procuresses, jailers, cheats, executioners, informants, traitors, madmen, sleuths, or seducers. Their names became jumbled in her head. The faces merged into one giant ball, and only one face lingered painfully in her memory, framed by a truly fiery beard, that of Malyuta Skuratov. Margarita's legs were buckling, and every moment she risked breaking into tears. The worst pain came from her right knee that everyone had been kissing. It became blue and swollen, even though Natasha's hand appeared several times and wiped it with a sponge soaked in some fragrant substance. At the end of the third hour, Margarita glanced downwards with utterly hopeless eyes and gave a happy start. The flow of guests was thinning.
"Balls are the same everywhere, my queen," Korofyov whispered. "The wave will subside momentarily. We have to endure but a few more minutes, I swear. Here comes a group of Brocken revellers. They always show up last. Yes, it's them. Two drunken vampires. Is that all? Oh, no, one more. No, two!"
The last two guests were climbing up the staircase.
"Oh, this one's new,"
Korofyov said, squinting through his monocle.
"Oh, yes, yes. Azazello once visited him over a drink of cognac and advised him how to get rid of a man he feared would expose him. And so he ordered his friend, who was indebted to him, to spray the victim's office walls with poison."
"What is his name?" asked Margarita.
"Why, to be honest, I do not yet know," Korofyov replied. "I'll have to ask Azazello."
"Who's that with him?"
"That is the man who so helpfully carried out his order. I am delighted,"
Korofyov shouted to the last two. The staircase grew empty. They waited a while longer, to be sure, but no one else emerged from the fireplace. A second later, without knowing how she got there, Margarita found herself back in the small room with the pool. She burst into tears instantly from the pain in her arm and leg and fell right to the floor. comforting her, Hella and Natasha dragged her again under the bloody shower, massaged her body, and Margarita reawakened.
"More, more, Queen Margot," whispered Korovyov, appearing beside her. "We must fly through the hall so the honoured guests do not feel neglected."
And once more, Margarita flew out of the room with the pool. On the stage, surrounded by the wall of tulips, a simian jazz band now raged instead of the Waltz King's orchestra. Holding a trumpet in his hand, a giant gorilla with shaggy sideburns stomped heavily as he conducted the orchestra. Arranged in a row, orangutans blew on shiny brass. Merry chimps with harmonicas sat on their shoulders. Two baboons with lion-like manes were playing grand pianos. On the mirrored dance floor, countless couples spun round as one in the same direction. Live satin butterflies fluttered above the dancing hordes. Flowers rained from the ceiling. Each time the electric lights dimmed, myriads of fireflies would light up in the capitals of the columns, and marsh lights would float through the air. Then Margarita found herself near an enormous pool surrounded by columns. A giant black statue of Neptune was spewing a broad pink stream from its mouth. An intoxicating scent of champagne rose from the pool. Unrestrained merriment reigned here. Laughing, the women performed swallow dives into the pool, and foamy columns of liquid shot up in the air. The crystal bottom of the pool was lit from below. Penetrating the thick wine, the light illuminated the silvery bodies swimming through it. Everyone left the pool completely drunk. Laughter rang and thundered under the columns as in a bathhouse. Margarita thought she saw mountains of oysters in vast stone basins float by underneath. Afterwards, she flew over a glass floor with rows of infernal furnaces burning underneath it, diabolical chefs in white garments dashing between them. Thoroughly disoriented, she saw dark dungeons lit by dim lamps, where girls served meat sizzling on hot coals. And for the second time, her strength began to wane.
"One last exit," Korovyov whispered anxiously, "and we are free."
Escorted by Korovyov, Margarita returned to the ballroom. The dancing had stopped, however, and the immense crowd of guests had gathered by the columns, leaving the centre of the hall empty. Margarita did not remember who helped her onto the platform that appeared in the empty space. As soon as she ascended it, she heard a clock somewhere strike midnight. At the last stroke of the clock, silence fell upon the crowd. Then Margarita saw Volant again. He walked, surrounded by Abaddon, Azazello, and several dark young men resembling Abaddon. Margarita saw that another platform had been prepared for Volant opposite her own, but he did not make use of it. Margarita was astounded that Volant had made this last great appearance at the ball looking exactly as he had looked in the bedroom. The same dirty, patched shirt hung on his shoulders, and worn bedroom slippers were on his feet. Volant had an unsheathed sword, but he leaned on it as if it were a cane. Limping, Volant stopped near his platform, and Azazello appeared immediately before him, carrying a tray. The tray bore a severed human head, with its front teeth knocked out. The silence continued, interrupted only by a distant ringing that sounded like a doorbell, somewhat puzzling under the circumstances.
"Mikhail Alexandrovich," Volant said quietly to the head.
The dead man's eyelids opened, and Margarita shuddered when she saw that the dead face had living eyes full of consciousness and suffering.
"It all came true, did it not?"
Volant continued, looking into the eyes.
"You were decapitated by a woman. The meeting never happened. And I am living in your apartment. You have always been a zealous proponent of the theory that upon removal of the head, all life ceases in a man. I am glad to inform you here, in the company of my guests, that your opinions are both clever and well-founded. One theory is as good as another, however. For instance, There is a theory that everyone shall receive exactly what he believes in. Let it be so. You will depart into non-existence, while I will happily drink to the joy of existence from the fine cup you will make.
Volant raised his sword. The flesh of the head blackened and fell away in pieces. The eyes vanished, and soon Margarita saw a yellowish skull on a golden stand with emeralds for eyes and pearls for teeth. The top of the skull swung open on a hinge.
"One moment, Messiah," said Karovyov.
A lone new guest stepped into the hall and headed towards Volant. Outwardly, he looked no different from the numerous other male guests, except for one thing. Even from far away, he was visibly shaking with agitation. Everything he saw shocked him. However, the guest was received with the utmost courtesy.
"Allow me to introduce," Volant turned to the other guests, "the most esteemed Baron Magl, a member of the Entertainment Commission, responsible for introducing foreign visitors to the capital."
Margarita noticed that Azazello had passed the tray with the skull to Kurofiov.
"Oh, by the way, Baron," Volant suddenly said, lowering his voice intimately, "I have heard rumors of your incredible curiosity. Wicked tongues have already let slip the words stool pigeon and spy. And finally, there are speculations that all of this will lead you to a most unfortunate demise no more than a month from now. Thus, to save you all this torturous waiting, we have decided to come to your aid, taking advantage of the fact that you invited yourself here with the explicit purpose of eavesdropping and spying as much as possible."
And then something odd happened. Abaddon stood in front of the Baron and removed his glasses for an instant. At the same time, a flash and a soft clap came from Azazello's hand, and the Baron began to fall over backwards, crimson blood spraying from his chest onto his starched shirt and waistcoat. Kurovyov filled the cup from the pulsating stream and handed it to Volant. The Baron's lifeless body was already lying on the ground.
"I drink your health, ladies and gentlemen," Volant said softly and raised the cup to his lips.
A metamorphosis took place. The patched shirt and worn slippers vanished, and Volant appeared in a black chlamys with a steel sword on his hip. He quickly approached Margarita, raised the cup, and ordered,
"Drink."
Margarita grew dizzy and swayed, but the cup was already at her lips, and voices she did not recognize whispered in both her ears.
"Do not be afraid, my queen. The blood has long since vanished in the earth, and grapevines grow where it was spilt."
Without opening her eyes, Margarita took a drink. A sweet current ran down her veins, and her ears started ringing. She thought she heard the deafening crowing of roosters and a distant march. The crowd of guests began to lose its form. The men and women turned to dust. Decay took over their bodies before Margarita's eyes, and a sepulchral stench began to flow from them. The columns fell apart, the lights extinguished, the halls shrank, and the fountains disappeared along with the tulips and the camellias. All that remained was all that there had ever been, a modest living room that once belonged to the jeweler's wife, and a strip of light falling from a half-open door. Margarita walked through it.